and welcome to episode 9 of Awin Talks, the affiliate marketing podcast. This month, Kevin is on something of a sabbatical for the next few weeks, and we are therefore entirely Kevless for this episode. So, rather than forcing you to listen to the dour monotone voices of just Craig and I, hi Craig.
Hi.
I've managed to secure the presence of Karina Toledo, Awin's influencer partnerships manager, to fill Kev's shoes. Hi, Karina.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, you're welcome. I feel the weight of replacing Kevin Edwards, for sure.
So we'll find out a little bit more about Karina's specific role at the network in just a minute. But before that, I wanted to let you know what else you can look forward to in this edition of the podcast. Our main interview today is with Rachel Side, who heads up the affiliate channel at one of our agency partners, the Cambridge-based firm Genie Goals. Dawn Quigg, Awin's UK client services director, has kindly agreed to take over the main interviewer reins today, and she'll be speaking to Rachel shortly to find out more about Rachel's role, how an agency like Genie Goals collaborates with Awin, and what her thoughts on the current state of affiliate marketing are. Rachel's well-versed in the e-commerce world, having spent time in advertiser, network, and now agency roles, so I'm sure she'll have some fascinating insights to share. And after that, Craig will be speaking to Karina again to start what I hope will become a regular podcast feature for us every month, Publisher Picks. Every month, we'll be asking one of our local publisher experts to pick out a couple of publishers on the network who they think are particularly interesting. We get hundreds of new publishers joining our global network every week, meaning there's a constant glut of new innovative businesses that brands can partner with, and Publisher Picks gives us a chance to regularly highlight some of those that we think are particularly interesting. So I'm looking forward to hearing more about the ones you've picked for us a little later, Karina. But first of all, maybe you can tell us a little bit about your specific role here at the network.
Yeah, sure. So I'd say my role has a few different facets that I work on. I'm part of the publisher management department. So in that sense, that focus is helping out influencers on the network as they are a little bit unique and different from, you know, the other affiliate types. So kind of like helping them out, what they need. And then the other side of it is Awin's own influencer marketing proposition. What do our clients want from us in this space? How can we deliver on that, which is the big Rubik's Cube I've been chipping away at for the past year. But I'd say this is mostly done via our managed campaign service. So many clients don't know that we have this service to offer. So if they have a bit of a bigger budget to invest in influencers, or if they have a particular like specific goal in this, they can use our managed campaign service. And basically for that period of time, they get an extra account manager on their program. So I'll come in, do that campaign for them, wrap it up, deliver the report. And none of this disturbs the day-to-day of their affiliate strategy, that everything that they have going on with the other affiliates.
Cool. So where did you work prior to joining Awin?
So I always worked in content and social media, and I think I've grown with this industry as it evolved. I remember my very first internship, like social media was blocked at work. Then from that, it went to, okay, I guess the assistant girl can post on Facebook for us. And from there, it went to working just with influencers since 2015. So in 2015, I started working at this company called Chloe Digital, which was a pretty innovative startup where the influencers were the clients. So I was an account manager there. I had a portfolio of about 40 influencers that I managed. And I'd say that Chloe Digital was sort of like the secret sauce behind the world's top influencers, because we created digital strategies for their businesses. So mostly the strategies I worked on was like audience growth, business and branding, monetization, all of that for influencers. So I didn't actually sell campaigns for them, but I just like, how can they grow their business? So any list or article that you look at, like, oh, world's top influencers or this or that, would have several Chloe Digital clients there. For example, like on the Forbes list of 2017 that they did, we had like 5 clients on the list, and I personally had 2 clients on the Forbes list. So really working with the biggest talent.
So that's quite different, actually, I guess, to the kind of campaigns I imagine you're working on within the affiliate channel, and what influencers can do within the affiliate channel might be slightly different. So What value do you think there is for the affiliate channel, for advertisers and influencers operating through our channel?
Yeah, definitely it's very different. Since I was coming from a publisher perspective, affiliates was just one piece of the puzzle that I was working on with them. I would say that influencers sit really well within the affiliate channel, but because, you know, they're digital, it's measurable, but that's really not all that they are. So for brands or new clients entering this space, the first thing I would say is that it needs to, a shift in perspective is needed. And I actually wrote about this in depth in this guide that we did for Performance In, which maybe we can link, give Performance In a plug because they need it. No one knows them. So I would say the value really is in the content itself, and the relationship that each influencer has with their audience, you know, and the authenticity that they bring, because, you know, the brand will just be part of a bigger conversation with the audience, you know. So for example, it's a mommy blogger and maybe she already like complained somewhere that her kid hasn't been sleeping well, and then suddenly she starts working with a brand that is somehow related to that. The product just comes in and fulfills a need for that person. So basically the influencer is the personification of their consumer. That's really what they should be thinking about. The main value I would say via the affiliate channel, though, is the transparency that we are able to offer, because affiliates is held to such a high degree of transparency and accountability that we basically have to disclose so much more information than what I would say other agencies disclose. And for the influencer themselves, like, the affiliate income that they earn is definitely not their top revenue stream for majority of them, but I would say that it gives them a lot of intel and a lot of data for them to leverage in other ways.
Oh, cool. So in terms of the influencer industry then, what do you think, in your opinion, is worth keeping tabs on right now?
Well, I think the industry is changing a lot and very rapidly. One thing that I feel is impacting us quite significantly is the increased professionalization of this area. So, for example, talent agencies coming in and talent managers. I mean, personally, if I was an influencer, I don't think I would hire an agency to do it in that way. I think I would in-house and have my own like business person in-house to do my campaigns, but not all of them are really good business people. Some of them can be like quite flaky on email and things like that. So the agencies do bring, you know, something that we need, which is someone to answer. But they also make things very, very expensive. So every time I read about it, I'm like, oh, great. My campaigns, my ROI for this campaign just got all messed up. So it's a big, big factor. Another thing I think everyone's been talking about is the Instagram checkout function.
Yeah.
So that will be huge, I'd say. But I think brands will then just see more and more value in influencer marketing. But we have to see where the chips fall with that one, because it's still on test basis and in the US only and all of that. If I were a brand, I don't know if I'd be running to put my checkout on Facebook, for example, you know, for several different reasons. And as a consumer, I also don't know if I want to, how much data I want to be giving them. But anyway, that's another debate. And then for social platforms, I think Instagram still is going to be around for a while, but we will see a shift as it becomes more of an advertising platform, because young people don't want to be impacted by so much advertising all the time. I think they've been doing well to do it in a little bit of a different way than they did with Facebook. So you can see that they already like preventing some mistakes that they did with Facebook. I think it will be around for a little longer, but we will see other platforms. I think the top new platform that people are talking about right now is TikTok, formerly Musical.ly, but I don't see an opportunity there for brands on the affiliate space, because basically it's just videos with music and all of that. So it's purely awareness, purely product placement. Gymshark actually did a little case with them and they targeted a few TikTok influencers, but that was purely just getting them to wear the products. So it didn't really have much depth. Mm-hmm.
Final question from me. Fire Festival, the documentary on Netflix, did you end up seeing that at all?
Yes.
So, what did you think of it?
So this is a funny one, because I actually saw it all go down like when Fire Festival was announced. You know, I've been watching this for a while, working in this for a while. None of my clients, at the time I was managing influence, none of my clients posted that orange square. So I was only working with very legit people. I was aware of it as it was happening. The doc was really good.
Yeah.
Lots of things. I think the influencers that were involved obviously were not to blame by any of that, because the Fire Festival was just had just produced a TV commercial and placed it on the BBC, not on the BBC, but like on ITV.
Yeah.
Would ITV be at fault? No. like, you know, so yeah. Even the employees didn't know what was going on there. How could the influencers know? I think it was a big missed opportunity from the agents, actually, like those talent managers. If anything, the great PR opportunity of donating after that documentary came out, they could have, those influencers should have just donated the money to the Bahamians, you know, which the population of the Bahamas, which was impacted by this. And, you know, this charitable effort would then generate a lot of good PR for those influencers. And I would sort of like push back on that, like of that, on them being seen as like these frivolous people. Yeah. So I think... Yeah. No one saw that opportunity, though. Yeah. So.
Well, thanks for that, Karina. And no, we'll obviously be hearing more from you later during Publisher Picks. Right now, though, it's over to Dawn and Rachel for the main interview.
Okay, great. Hi, this is Dawn. I'm the UK Client Services Director here at Awin. And today I'm joined by the Head of Affiliates at Genie Goals, the lovely Rachel Side. So Rachel, hello. Thank you for joining us.
Hi Dawn, my pleasure.
And how are you?
Yeah, I'm really well, thank you. Excited to be back in the office.
Excellent. Rachel, can you tell us a little bit about Genie Goals and what the business does?
Yeah, definitely. So we are a full service digital marketing agency. We started off as being predominantly PPC based, but I guess due to like client demands and stuff that clients were asking for, we've definitely looked to expand our services. And we now have obviously PPC still is the core of the business, but we have paid social, affiliates obviously, which is why I'm here, display, video, CSS services. And we're actually a very like multilingual agency, so we do a lot with clients across Europe in particular and have a lot of those languages and translations in-house. We're definitely an agency that specializes in retail. So some of our clients include the likes of Karl Lagerfeld, the Conrad Shop, Amara, Raging Bull. And from that kind of background in retail, we've developed a lot of tech as well that kind of supports retail. So I'd guess things like feed optimization, our own bidded management software, and a lot of stuff in Google shopping space, which we've like kind of won awards for, I guess, and been like a real core of the activity we do.
Excellent. So a really broad range overall, and it's great to hear about, I guess, where you specialise as well. How does Genie Goals partner with Awin currently? What's the relationship currently about and what's it like?
Yeah, so at the moment, we run a few of our clients' programmes via Awin. So a couple of examples of those would be Karl Lagerfeld and Raging Bull. I think one of the reasons we kind of have partnered with Awin for a lot of clients, we've actually worked with clients on their first programs via Awin, but also actually taken over a couple and looked to do some global expansion for them. And I think that was one of the core reasons that Awin's quite a key partner for us, is that we did want a partner had quite a robust solution for also being able to expand with some of our clients into other markets. I also feel like for us as an agency, we're pretty keen to like work with like the large networks and the like of Awin, because we feel like we get quite a lot of data and data insight and lots of extra resource, which maybe we have access to internally, stuff like the cross-channel data from the fact that we're often working with clients across other channels. Yep. But to get that real core and that real affiliate marketing insight, it's been invaluable working with someone like Awin to get that extra bit in the affiliate industry.
Amazing. And what about you and your own specific role at Genie Goals? I guess tell us a little bit about the day in the life of Rachel Side and what your role entails.
Cool, definitely. Yeah. So I basically head up the channel at Genie Goals. I've been there for just under 2 years now. And I guess a large part of my role has been really establishing the affiliate channel within the agency, because we didn't have affiliate offering before I joined. So that's been, I guess, establishing how affiliates is going to run for us and how as an agency that works. Mm-hmm. And also like establishing a team there as well and making sure that we've got the team of people to actually run the programs. So my role can vary quite differently. I'm quite hands-on with a lot of our clients. So a huge amount of my role might be providing strategy, making sure that we're developing our clients as well. really massively kind of cheesy thing to say, but we do kind of like do the classic we're a brand extension type thing. But I think that is quite true, because we often are managing other channels.
Yeah.
So we do find that we are quite entrenched with a client's wider marketing mix, which is quite a nice position to be in, which means we can provide that extra level of insight.
And can I just ask you how you found that challenge of setting up, I guess, affiliates within Genie Goals, something that, you know, I guess has been your sole responsibility to try and grow?
Challenge is a good word to put. It's definitely challenging. When you go into an agency, you're starting, I guess, from nothing. So there was no channel there already. Mm-hmm. We had a bit of demand from a client, which was quite a large client, and they wanted someone to run affiliates for them. And there was kind of that kind of starting point. So we've got the client, we're going to start the channel.
Yeah.
And then really from there, it was really up to me. Like as a business, Genie Goals is quite agile and you get quite a lot of ownership. So it was really like, you know, we've got this client who wants to do affiliates. We've got you who knows about affiliates. Let's go in and kind of try and establish the channel. And I think really it's just about taking that stuff that you've learned elsewhere in your career and really trying to apply it to the ethos that we have with Genie, which is about trying to revolutionize what we're doing for our clients in the digital marketing space and how we're trying to connect up what we're doing across channels as well.
Excellent. Okay, and I mean, you're definitely not new to affiliates as an industry. I recognise the face, somebody that used to work at Awin as well. Tell us a little bit about your background, I guess, and how you've been involved in the affiliate industry to this point.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I actually had to look on my own LinkedIn to work out how long I'd been in the industry and how long I worked at Awin for, because obviously I'm ex-Awin, yeah. Gino Dawn. So overall, I've been in the industry for 7 years, and five of those were at Awin. So before I even joined Awin, I was working client side, but in much kind of like broader roles, I guess. Mm. So I worked at Ted Baker and Net-a-Porter in kind of like marketing assistant, marketing exec roles. And then a really good friend of mine came to Awin and she kept saying to me, do you want to come and work at Awin? Do you want to work at Awin? Do you want to work in affiliates? And asked me like loads of times. And it's something I hadn't really thought about. And then I came over here for the interview, met the Awin guys, including yourself. Yeah. Do you remember back in the day?
I do.
had the interview and was really like, I guess really interested and inspired about working in such a fast moving industry that was completely performance led. There was also a huge draw about the social life as well, which to me, very much enjoyed in my 20s. But being at Awin was like an amazing opportunity really to learn from the ground up about affiliate marketing.
Sure.
So I worked my way up, and when I, just before I ultimately left Awin, I was a global account director and I got a really amazing opportunity to work across the Expedia and Hotels.com brands and like travel around and go to all these different markets. So it was just a really amazing grounding, I guess, in the affiliate space, in the global space, in developing like larger programs, and just having that knowledge, I think, has really helped in moving forward into Genie Goals.
Absolutely.
And in the role I'm in now.
I won't ask you what your favorite place is, but ultimately I guess what I want to draw upon is the fact that you've had advertiser side experience, network side, now your agency side. Do you think that really supports your awareness of the channel and how you can help the clients you now work with at Genie Goals?
Definitely. Because even when I was client side, even though I wasn't working hands-on in affiliates then, I kind of really appreciate the challenges that can come from being in the client side in the business. Like, sometimes when you're maybe at a network or an agency, you can be a little bit like, oh, why won't they just sign that off? Or why can't we just get this piece of work pushed through? But actually, there's so much more that goes on inside the brand that you maybe don't see. And there's a lot more in terms of managing different departments, maybe managing the brand message, the brand image. And actually coming from that, then going network, you kind of understand the benefits and challenges of a network as well. And now hopefully when I'm at the agency side, I feel like I'm in a good position to kind of marry the two. Mm-hmm. Because I guess in a way, being at the agency, we still work very closely with networks, so I understand the network point of view, I hope, and I always understand the way the network operates and works, but I also feel like I can really understand the client side of it as well. So I guess our part is to kind of bring that together and do what's right in the channel for the benefit of the client, but also taking on board everyone's knowledge and all the different insights that we can get from different areas and different people involved in, I guess, that partnership.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, I mean, you quoted 7 years there of being in the affiliate industry overall. It's great to see somebody that lives and breathes it as much as you do. I guess, how have you seen the industry change over those 7 years? Is there anything obvious to call out that you've really seen shift?
Yeah, I was sort of thinking back about this one, and I was thinking when I was first starting my account manager role in Awin, and how different it feels to what we're doing now. And there's some things that are constants in affiliates, I think, and there's things that don't change, you know, that kind of very performance mechanism, the fact that it's often seen by clients as that really reliable channel for being able to drive sales and to be able to really kind of pull on sales quickly and, you know, change that needle of performance quite fast. Mm-hmm. But when I first started, I almost felt like the way of getting there with sales is a little bit more linear. You kind of got the media pack, you knew what you're doing every month, you kind of signed off tenancies. And I'm not saying that doesn't exist now, it still does, but I feel like in a way there's much more different ways of getting there. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's much more different affiliate types now. The industry's really broadened up.
More opportunities, yeah.
Much more opportunity. And I don't feel like it's quite as structured as when I first started. I definitely don't feel that when I'm managing a program.
And do you
now.
Think that's for the better?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Because I think it allows you a lot of opportunities to approach things in different ways and approach what the client wants in different ways. I don't think it's such a, you know, you have to do this one thing and if you don't do that, there's nothing else. I feel like there are other opportunities. Yeah. And there are ways of getting to that end result, which is ultimately that performance metric for the client.
Okay, and I guess one thing I'm interested in, do you think affiliates can be a valuable means of achieving growth internationally?
Yeah, I think it really gives brands an opportunity to tap into a customer base in that market and to kind of reach a customer in the ways and the different, I guess, the different ways that they're shopping in that market. I think it can be a really good research tool as well for a brand that's wanting to expand into a market. If you're looking at affiliate sites and the way customers are shopping, you can maybe get an idea of the kind of promotions you need to run. Even like the other brands that are in the market. For example, is there other brands in the market that are similar to what you're doing or are also international brands? Because then you get an idea of the market there and if there's actually interest from the consumer. I also think there's kind of like some really nice reverse learnings within international growth as well. Like we have often run campaigns in certain markets that have then really almost sometimes dictated or shaped other marketing activity. For example, one client was really keen and doing a lot more in the APAC region. We started quite tentatively, tried a couple of things. Then the next year we tried, I guess, loads more. We basically maxed out a whole calendar for the quarter and we were really able to show some trends and some insight there that actually helped us lead on to other areas. And a really good example of that is the importance of Singles Day. Like to us in the affiliate industry, Singles Day everywhere, you hear about it all the time, every event, Q4s, people are talking about Singles Day. But we found originally we were really trying to push the agenda of Singles Day and saying it's a really important day, really important day. Mm-hmm. But we never had any set marketing activity for it. And then when we really went for it in that quarter in the APAC region and we booked a lot of activity around Singles Day, we could really show a huge peak and a huge kind of surge in traffic and sales that was outside of the kind of classic dates like Black Friday and Cyber Monday. And actually that meant that moving forwards, actually we saw that it appearing across in all their marketing channels. We actually saw it appearing in their marketing calendar. And there was a much more consideration in that event. And a lot of that came from us really championing the work of affiliates around that event and that key shopping event as well.
I guess you're seeing this trend of the channel complementing the other channels that these brands are working with.
Definitely, definitely.
Do you think there's still any restrictions there? Has that still got a long way to go? I mean, how do you see the channels interacting with one another? And how do you see that from an agency point of view?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely think there's a long way to go with it. I think we see data across different channels and we see the impact that the different channels has on one another. And we definitely can see the impact that affiliates has in the customer journey. I just don't think we're quite there yet in actually doing anything to be really transparent, really having that full piece of doing what anything with that data in a way. I guess it's really useful for us when we go into meetings, if we're seeing like different data sets, analytics data, particularly some programs we work with are quite content focused. So we're able to go in as an agency if we don't have, you know, the tracking in Awin, for example, available, the influence tracking for various technical reasons that usually happen, we're still able to see in like Google Analytics that, for example, certain affiliate types are really influential and we're able to prove that value beyond just the kind of last sales number that we're showing. I just think we're still at that place of, as an agency, we see that, we talk about it, we're able to communicate it and show that cross-channel. But I guess it's where a lot of people are at, are trying to really get that to play out into what that means and what that then does in the longer term to really impact your activity.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, really great to hear that. I guess the affiliate channel has opened up these doors to more international growth, particularly with who you're working with. I guess, do you see any variations in how affiliate marketing works across these different international markets?
I think we see lots of like similarities and also lots of differences. Like, it's a hard one to kind of talk about, because I think there's always this thing, this like kind of myth that it's going to be very, very different. But actually what I see is a lot of the principles are the same.
Yeah.
A lot of the affiliate types are quite similar. Like, I'm not seeing a huge amount of difference in the way I'm talking to affiliates, maybe in one market to another, and how we're planning. Yeah. There are obviously different affiliate types that are more prominent in certain markets. So if you're going to a market and you're very heavily against voucher code or incentive sites, there's maybe not going to be a wealth of other opportunities out there beyond that, if that's a definite no-go for you as a brand. But what we have actually found is that there are a lot of markets where there's a huge amount of stuff going on. Like, Singapore is a really big example for us. We had an affiliate there called Shopback, who had an amazing like quarter-long promo covering the whole of Q4, which was basically this big shopping festival where they had like gamified kind of content to get involved in and opportunities with codes. And it was just very, very nice to see that there was something going on way beyond sometimes what we were actually seeing in other markets at that time. Yeah. What you'd expect. So I think it's more about, from the client's point of view, actually thinking about that they're ready to go in those markets, and actually more thinking, is my site ready? Have I got the right payment methods? Am I translated? Because I think 9 times out of 10, there'll definitely be affiliate base there to be able to promote you or do something.
Yeah. And I mean, you actually touched on the idea there of, I guess, seeing these new opportunities arising. Are there any more that you can expand on there in terms of what you see arising in the affiliate channel at this point in time?
So I think one of the things that we've obviously seen quite a lot of is the opening up of the Google Shopping space. And yeah, I think with the CSS partners being able to bid in the product level ads and being able to have much more diversity in Google Shopping, it's something where we work with a luxury fashion brand, for example. And they work with all the big, like, kind of fashion comparison sites, like the likes of List and Stylite, for example.
Yeah.
And actually, more and more, we're getting proposals through for those affiliates wanting to do the Google Shopping activity for them. And it's definitely an area that I think is going to be quite exciting this year, and quite a good opportunity for brands to be able to kind of try and harness that reach with quite a targeted customer base. As an agency, because we do manage other types of their activity, and obviously sometimes their shopping activity and their PPC activity, it can be quite a nice way of us being able to then oversee the actual stuff with the affiliate side of things as well, to actually look at any wider impact, if there is any at all. And actually, I think on our kind of Genie shopping network side of the business, we don't see impact. We see brands come into us now because they see the real opportunity of being able to increase their reach in shopping. It's not so much feared it's like cannibalizing anything, because it isn't. It is actually just increasing your reach and your opportunities to kind of dominate in that space.
And actually, I just wanted to touch on something you mentioned a bit earlier, which is, I guess, the work at Genie Goals very much at the moment seems to focus quite heavily on retail and luxury as sectors. What challenges do you think these sectors currently face as you see it?
So in terms of like their actual business, we haven't seen from our clients like maybe big challenges in terms of like the high street. What we've actually seen is a lot of them coming to us wanting to do even more in digital. So they're wanting to do much more and invest much more in digital and grow. Mainly sometimes because their growth in digital has maybe been slower. Some of them actually maybe came with their own transactional websites, actually a bit later to the party than some of like the other players in the space maybe have.
Mm-hmm.
So they're now entering a period where they're wanting to kind of push and really rapidly grow their digital, which is a really good position to be in, I guess, and good for us as an agency. And also nice, because actually what we are finding is that affiliates is part of that conversation, which is a really good position to also
Excellent.
Be in. I think with luxury and fashion, there is always a still a bit of a challenge is that we have to be really conscious of the brand. Like, I know that should be the case across every retailer you work with, and it is. But it really is about, you know, that brand image and making sure that we really are aligning that with the affiliate types. We can be a little bit more restricted when we're managing an affiliate program, that we maybe not got the opportunity to work with all affiliate types. We maybe have to be more heavy in content, which is great, but it's also one of those things that then comes with its own challenges. You know, working in content can be slightly more expensive. You can have to look at slightly more different KPIs for a client. It might not always be ROI driving. And you have to be able to have those conversations and actually be as an agency, and when you're talking to the network and even to the affiliate, really thinking about how you're positioning and shaping that activity for the client.
Yep. And I've got to ask, I mean, you've been in the industry for a number of years, as we've mentioned. Any areas of the industry you'd love to see improvements happening in?
Yeah, definitely. I'm probably going to say the stuff that everyone always says, but I think this probably has been going on for a while. I definitely think the whole conversation around getting the value recognised in the channel.
Sure.
I do think it's got better, but I think actually being agency side and, you know, a smaller team in terms of affiliates, I'm doing much more conversations like direct to prospective clients, mm-hmm. or to even, you know, clients that we're working with in other areas, and actually trying to really champion the channel. And it's still surprising that you are seeing that sometimes affiliates is sometimes a bit of a harder sell, and a bit like more saying that, you know, there is a huge amount of value here, but they might not have a program yet, or they might have a program that just kind of sits and runs. And you really want the opportunity to get, I guess, you know, every agency network to get their teeth into it and actually show the value. And we find that when we do that, we can show great things in the channel and how great it can be and how it can really hit their KPIs. But sometimes it's just that challenge of getting that seat at the table and that opportunity to talk about affiliates in the same way that, you know, we're maybe talking about PPC or like paid social, for example. You know, it's kind of like saying we've got the same value and we can show the same value that you're seeing elsewhere.
So I guess what's your advice on that? I mean, it sounds like you've seen some doors open and had some success with those conversations. What would you tell people from other agencies, other networks, even advertiser side, who are trying to invest in the channel? What advice would you give these people to try and open those doors?
Yeah, well, I guess for us, it's like we really try and make sure that we are putting it on the table all the time. So that's one thing that Genie Goals is really great at. It's really good at support. We support all the channels we've got under our remit, and we're really good at trying to put that in front of the client and champion it as much as we are championing other channels, which is a really good opportunity. I think one thing we try and do a lot of is actually just having conversations, and actually we do like free audits or just consult or offer advice. And actually we find when we can start having just those conversations, even before it's got to the point of like saying, oh, we want to run your channel for you, actually having those conversations opens up the opportunity and opens up the insight that we can provide. And actually, I think it's just about that, really. I mean, it sounds very basic, but all we can really do is say that we're going to champion that channel as an agency. And also, we'll look at your program. We'll talk to you about what your challenges are. We'll ask questions. We'll show you how it works for other brands. And then you find the conversation evolves from there.
I guess that's a really important point there to finish that question on, which is never give up. Keep striving to have those conversations and keep pushing for the channel, keep fighting for it. So final question from me, a bit of future gazing, if you like. How do you personally see the channel evolving in the future?
Yes. So I would like to see a lot of the stuff that we are, I think we're experiencing now in the channel continue. I do think there's some really good stuff going on. I think there's a lot of diversity in the affiliate mix, which I think is really good. I love the fact that there's other areas coming in, like there's a little bit of crossover with the shopping channels, like all the work on the influencer side of things. I think all these kind of like little ecosystems that are happening with the affiliate space make it really exciting. I also really like the just wider industry conversations that are going on about diversity in public speaking, and just this way of like making sure that we're not as a channel staying too still, and we're kind of mm-hmm. keeping moving, and that I feel that the channel's great at that. I feel that the channel's quite good at reinventing itself and coming up with new ways of reaching customers. And for those clients and those agencies and those networks that want to get involved in that, there's so much opportunity to keep that conversation going and to try new things. So if we can keep that kind of enthusiasm and that excitement going for the channel, I think that's probably the best position we can be in. And then I think it's just a tie into my last thing. It's just that value in the channel as well, like making sure that we are able to have those conversations at a higher level and recognize value. I mean, again, I don't want to be like lifetime value. Everyone talks about that. But I have seen a shift recently with a couple of clients who I would say are actually really digging into their affiliate data. And, you know, they've been looking at individual affiliates' performance and profitability, but in a really good way, because what it's meant is it's opened up conversations at a much more granular level. And actually, we've had them come to us and say, oh, that affiliate that we did work with last month, actually, we can see the customer they deliver is a really great customer. It's like a higher than average new customer rate, for example. They deliver customer in this region that we're looking to really focus on. And as a result of them doing that analysis and looking into that value, it's actually meant that we can do more and we can now drive more to their goals. And I hope that more brands will start to think a bit more like that and maybe start even in small steps. Even if you just look at two affiliates in your program and analyze them, mm-hmm. it's a start of really actually understanding how the channel can actually drive and actually hopefully opening up those internal conversations and making it much more about just those like top line numbers you look at week to week.
Fantastic. Well, Rachel, thank you very much. It's been really amazing to hear the opinion of somebody that's, I guess, worked in various different roles across the industry, and to specifically hear more about the kind of work you're doing at Genie Goals and all of the opportunities that are arising there. So very exciting times.
Yeah, very excited.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. Good talking to you.
Thanks.
So yeah, as Rob alluded to earlier, we now have a publisher pick section, which we're going to try and do every month. This is where we're going to be getting one of our local publisher representatives to talk about some of the new innovative business that comes our way. What have you got for us this month, Karina?
Right. So in the influencer marketing space, I usually make the distinction between like, you know, if you're going to work with influencers like one-to-one as, you know, individually, or if you're going to work via companies and sub-networks. So the first one, what is a blogger? So individual influencer, and she's been doing quite well for us. And actually, Eowyn and the John Lewis team have submitted the work that they've been doing with her specifically for the Performance Marketing Awards, and they got a nomination. So, you know, it's not just us that I think, not only us think that she's good. So I'd say, so Midlife Chic is a blog created by Nikki Garnett. It tackles like a different moment in women's lives, I think, that isn't explored much in the media, which is for women over 40, in that second chapter of life where your kids are grown up and you're regaining your independence. And, you know, who are you in this new phase of life? And like, what's your identity about? So I feel like media is very much focused on either very young women, or there's also a lot of content for like young moms and babies and toddlers and things like that, but nothing much for that midlife area of life. So she, you know, was able to create a big audience because, you know, no one was talking about this. And obviously a lot of women felt in the same way that she did. So I think that in that case is the authenticity of her content that creates this really strong relationship with the audience. I actually did ask her what she wanted to get across, and she was like, I think you're going to word this better than I can, but here you go. And I actually can't, so I'll read it. So she said, the one thing she wanted to get across is the importance of authenticity and the proof that if you write honest content about brands you genuinely love, readers will feel the connection and it converts into sales. And really, I can't put it better than that. And I think for brands, like when they're trying to work with bloggers, like if the blogger says no or the fit isn't right, like there's no value in pushing it because it has to be natural.
Yeah, I had a look at the site actually, and you're right. You can kind of, the writing style is... It's actually a really good writing style. It's different sometimes than when you see some blogs that are a bit more kind of brand focused. This seems quite natural. Mm. So it is good for that. And as well as you talk about kind of that age group, I suppose, as, you know, we're getting to a stage now where, you know, because the internet has been around for so long that that age group's getting bigger online. It's not how it was where it's just a young audience. And so I suppose it is quite a growing market. What kind of brands do you think that would be attracted to then?
So obviously John Lewis is working quite well with her. So the John Lewis nomination was really interesting. Obviously, I can't say much on that because it's confidential. But in this case, what I would say is that they, you know, identified amongst all their affiliates and all the bloggers that work with them and all the influencers that work with them, they identified one influencer that actually had, you know, that hit a lot of KPIs for them and that actually had the type of consumer that they wanted to bring into the fold. So they just went, took a deep dive into that work and, you know, gave her a lot more freedom as well to kind of pitch her ideas back to them and like how she saw that working relationship. And that is, I think, what made that possible. And I think once they, John Lewis shifted to that and partners, you know, branding, you know, they started looking at publishers as well in that light, you know, seeing them as partners and seeing that as a working partnership. So I think that is really the key of that success. But other brands that she works with is like Marks and Spencer, JD Williams, you know, mostly fashion, I would say, definitely.
Oh, cool. Okay. So yeah, so that brings us on to the other pick that you've got for us today.
Yeah, so the other pick would be 21 Buttons, which is an app where people can shop influencer content, primarily fashion as well. But fashion is really the first sector, I think, that identified influencers as being really important for them, for their marketing mix. So it's way more developed than other sectors. 21 Buttons is a Spanish company, but they are available in a few different countries. So they are an app. In the UK alone, they've had 1 million installs, but in 4 countries, they've had 7 million installs. I would say this is a great opportunity for brands that, you know, for a fashion brand that they want to start working with influencers, but they're still not confident in their strategy. So it's a good way to start working with a CPA partner, such as 21 Buttons. They are a consumer-facing brand, so they have their own users, but they're also a sub-network for the influencers, and they have a revenue share with the influencers. So that is just something to be aware of, that commissions need to be a little bit higher than other publishers maybe, because they have to cover their own costs and also pay the influencers who are the ones creating all that content. But yeah, it's a great opportunity for fashion brands, I would say. And especially if a brand is on that young audience, like majority of their audience is Gen Z and millennial. Yeah. So 38% of their audience is 18 to 24 year old women, and 22% is 25 to 35 year old women.
Are they kind of like any other publishers that we have on the network?
Yeah, so I would say they're a bit of a competitor to Reward Style and the Like to Know It app. Actually, a competitor only to the Like to Know It app currently, because Reward Style is the bigger network and then the app is just a part of it, whereas 21 Buttons is focused primarily on the app.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for that, Karina. And thanks again for joining us today.
You're most welcome. It was my pleasure.
Good. We'll get you back in again soon. A very quick roundup of upcoming AWIN event news for you now. First of all, you can still register to attend and apply to be a sponsor of our annual US conference Think Tank, which is taking place in Chicago over June 4th and 5th, and where both Kevin and I will be speaking and interviewing a selection of prominent industry figures there. You can find out about more details on the event by heading over to the AWIN US events page. Meanwhile, we're currently firmly in the throes of preparing the agenda for this year's UK conference, which is also called Think Tank. We've actually borrowed the name from our American counterparts. And you can now register for that event on the AWIN UK site too. Think Tank UK is taking place on Thursday the 13th of June. This year, the theme for the conference is future-proofing, and with the event being held at the iconic County Hall in Westminster, London, we decided to opt for a Brexit-themed keynote session. That's right, I'm afraid even affiliate marketing conferences provide no escape from the subject of Brexit now. However, I can promise you that this year's main talk will be particularly interesting. We have Joe Twyman, the former head of political and social at YouGov and the co-founder and director of DeltaPol UK, leading on the main stage with his talk, Brexit, a case study in future-proofing an industry. And in it, he'll be discussing how the world of political polling has undergone radical change over the last 50 years, with new technology bringing about new challenges and opportunities when it comes to better understanding the opinions, beliefs and behaviours of different people, whether they be in the shape of voters or consumers. Joe will be using the small matter of Britain's exit from the EU as an example of how political polling has adapted and the lessons learned that could prove useful to anyone keen to understand their customers better, both now and in the future. And we'll be sharing more information on what to expect from both of those summer conferences over the next few episodes. In the meantime, remember you can still download a digital copy of the Awen Report 29 for free from the Awen website. Craig is still making his way through the report. How far have you got now, Craig?
Page 4.
That's a paltry sum of reading. Anyway, if you have any questions for us here at Awen Talks or recommendations of people in the industry to interview, then please do drop us a line at our new dedicated email address, which, Craig, is...
awentalks@awen.com. Is that
well,
right, Rob?
Well remembered.
Thank you.
Anyway, that's it for this month. So thanks for joining us. So it's goodbye from me. It's goodbye from Craig.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from Karina.
Bye, guys.